Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this PPD MPCC joint seminar titled Leveraging Quantum Hardware for Fundamental Physics. It is our pleasure to introduce today's speaker, Jack Arras. Dr. Arras is a Presidential Fellow at City St. George's University of London and an Honorary Senior Research Fellow at UCL. His research spans collider phenomenology, advanced computational methods, and more recently, the interface between quantum information science and high-energy physics. His work focuses on extracting maximum physics insights from LHC data, particularly through reinterpretation frameworks, detector simulations, and statistically robust inference techniques. He has made significant contributions to tools such as MedAnalysis 5, and to the broader effort of preserving and reusing experimental analysis in high-energy physics. More recently, his research has expanded into quantum computing and tensor network methods, exploring how quantum and quantum-fired techniques can enhance data analysis, anomaly detection, and simulation in particle physics. Dr. Raj has an extensive publication record across collider physics, machine learning applications, and quantum simulations, and is actively involved in shaping modern data-driven approaches to physics beyond standard model. Today, he will focus on the seminar titled Leveraging Quantum Hardware for Fundamental Physics. So please join me in welcoming Jack.
I'm blushing. Thanks a lot for having me. It's really nice to be here. It's a beautiful weather today. It was beautiful to bike over here from the train station. So I'm going to talk about how can we use, because Bridge wanted me to focus on a particular paper, I'm going to talk about how we can use quantum hardware and tune it so that we can simulate particle physics experiments or any kind of collider experiments in the future, hopefully. I added a lot of introductory slides, because I thought there would be PhD students and everything, but I can skip them quite fast. So what I'm going to talk about is I'm going to introduce, first of all, digital quantum computing, how does the quantum computer works. Then I'm going to introduce how simulating fundamental works in this framework. And then I'm going to move on to hybrid quantum system. This is not classical and quantum. This is QMOD and qubit working together. And then I'm going to talk about quantum optimal control, basically how can we use AI to tune the quantum hardware to get it specifically tuned for our simulation work, and hopefully get it work in a nearer time than 30 years from now. So let me quickly talk about how does the quantum computer work. So any operation in quantum computer, we write it basically a Kirchhoff circuit. Circuit goes from left to right, where we start from an initial state and we manipulate this initial state, which is a zero-bit state, qubit state, I should say. We manipulate this with single qubit gates. These are unitary operators, Pauli matrices, basically a C2 generator, right? So we can manipulate this on a, if you look at the block sphere, we can manipulate a random vector on a block sphere. We're using these operators to map this into different positions in a block sphere. And more importantly, we can, of course, rotate these vectors wherever we want to be able to span any vector space in this block sphere or multi-dimensional block sphere for that matter. So the next third component of this is, of course, two-qubit gates, which is basically creating these entanglements that we are looking for. Here, I'm showing you the CNOT gates, where if it checks the first qubit, for example, it checks if it's one or zero. If it's one, it flips the other one as well. If it's zero, it doesn't do anything. So how does it work? If I look into a zero, zero state, for instance, apply CNOT gate and ask, what is going to be the probability of my state? At the end, I will get zero because there's nothing to flip. But if I rotate this 90 degrees to get 50% chance of having 0, 0, and 1, I start to get now the second qubit is flipping as well because of this CNOT gate. And then what I do is, of course, I need to do my measurements. I can choose a Hamiltonian that describes my model, whatever I want to study, and I calculate the expectation value by sampling from this quantum computer and hopefully get minimal noisy results. So what can I do in terms of simulation? Of course, there are lots of ways that we can simulate. What I'm interested mostly is simulation of many-body systems. For example, we can do condensed matter systems, quantum many-body systems, chemistry. In chemistry, they're simulating the molecular structure of certain interesting molecules that is really hard to simulate with classical computers. But what I'm currently interested in, simulating QCD, hopefully one day. How does the proton structure with quarks and gluons? Of course, there are lots of different ways that we can do this with, for example, exact diagonalization. The problem with exact diagonalization is we cannot do so many atoms, so many quarks, so many gluons at the same time. We have limited RAM, so we cannot ramp them into one thing. We can go away from this with Monte Carlo methods, but Monte Carlo has certain limitations that I will go into. Then to go beyond those limitations, we describe tensor network methods to solve them. But of course, they will come with their own challenges. So let me go through step by step what these challenges are and what's the problem with simulating QCD. We really know well how QCD works. Perturbation theory works perfectly. There's no problem. The problem comes when you go to low energy where perturbation theory basically fails. So we, in the 70s, I'm saying we, but I wasn't alive in the 70s, Kogut and Susskind invented this lattice QCD framework where they discretize the Euclidean lattice space to be able to represent, to be able to compute anything that we can on the side of QCD. The problem in the lattice QCD framework is there's something called sign problem, where if you have this chemical potential type of complex term, what you get, you start to get a noise in the noise is not the correct word. Integrability becomes really challenging. For example, if I don't have this term, if I just have the action, the expectation value of that action is quite simply integrating, let's say, a Gaussian distribution. It's really easy to integrate. But if I have, for example, a time evolution or a chemical potential like this, my distribution becomes very oscillatory, so it's getting really hard to integrate. You need to get nitty-gritty to be able to. So the lattice spacing needs to be very, very fine-grained to be able to integrate this entire thing. The problem is we don't have that computational power, so it becomes really challenging to do. So we have this workspace. We can do, for example, we can calculate everything with the perturbative field theory. We can do a lot of things with lattice QCD as well. What are the specific that I'm thinking about that we cannot do? For example, the main things is proton distribution function. How does the momentum of the proton distributed among quarks and gluons? We kind of extract this information, but since we have to project this into a light cone, it really becomes hard to compute on a lattice QCD or even tensor network methods that I'm going to show a bit about. And lastly, the final part of this collider event, how does the quarks and gluons that we observe becomes the mesons and hadrons that we observe in the LHC fragmentation functions. It's really hard because it's basically an evolution function. It's time-dependent observable. So with lattice QCD, we cannot access this time-dependent observables because of the term that I showed you. It's really hard, becomes really hard to integrate. With the Lamet method, we can basically, by assuming that PDF momentum is really high, you can kind of extract PDFs, but fragmentation functions are really challenging to do. So it becomes very computationally costly. So the question that I want to achieve with quantum computers in the future, hopefully, how can we simulate time-dependent non-perturbative phenomena? Not to replace lattice QCD or any current methods, they are really good at certain regimes, but how can we resolve things in the regimes that we cannot compute anything at the moment? So, what about PDF? Why I'm so interested in PDF? When I was young, I thought supersymmetry was a thing to save us all. So I was working on Gluino production, and as you can see here, when you calculate the cross section of the Gluino production, we kind of understand the scale uncertainties, and they are pretty much the same throughout mass evolution of the Gluino. But as you can see, PDF distribution gets really tricky because we don't have enough data to be able to fit in these regimes where energy is quite high. We are up to have like 100% uncertainty there. So having an access to our first principle calculation will enable this to be shrink. Of course, there's going to be theoretical uncertainties, but we will have much better understanding of how to constrain these uncertainties. So using tensor network methods, we are actually right now working on how to compute this thing. And the problem comes with this matrix element. As you can see, there are two time evolution type of operators which boost your matrix element to onto a life cone, which creates these issues in Lattice QCD framework or any other framework. And it's quite large. For example, if you want to calculate the tensor network with a single flavor, you can get nice distributions. But you can see that already with single flavor physics, I'm going beyond momentum fraction one, which is because of the size of my lattice. I require a long, very large lattice to be able to simulate this properly so that my quark doesn't have more momentum than my proton, which doesn't make sense. So there's a lot of resources that is required to be able to simulate three flavor physics in terms of QCD. So that's what we want to achieve with quantum computers, hopefully. So of course, there are different methods. We want to eventually come to fault-tolerant quantum computers, but currently, if you look at this chart, this is basically showing you the representability of certain different methods with respect to energy scale or the dimensionality of space. Unfortunately, current quantum computers are quite limited, but of course, we need to find a way to enable the simulation in the future when these methods are going to be available. So tensor networks can enable you to go a little bit further, but you cannot go two-dimensional or three-dimensional. Two-dimensional, it's possible, but it's very limited. Three-dimensional, it becomes really hard. Also, you need to find a way to embed the Hamiltonian in a really smart way to be able to efficiently calculate these methods, especially if you go to two-flavor, three-flavor physics, it becomes really complicated, even if you're working on a very simple Hamiltonian. I am currently arguing that maybe neural networks can bridge the gap between today's tensor network, limited tensor networks, and maybe tomorrow's quantum computers. I'm not going to talk about that today, but today I want to talk about how can we use current quantum hardware resources, what type of hardware resources we can use to basically simulate some of these methods. So, of course, QCD, eventually, when we want to simulate it, it's a very complex object. I'm dividing it into three main categories. First category is basically just fermionic. Second category is just gauge fields or photons, whatever you want. And the third category, gauge fields interacting with the fermions, right? So we have the combination of these three will become our QCD. So the first category can be easily simulated on a quantum computer because I can simulate fermions as a qubit, degrees of freedom match. So, okay, that's nice. But the problem becomes, how about gauge fields? This has infinite degrees of freedom. Okay, you can argue that I can map these the infinite degrees of freedom into a discrete group, and I can cut off the truncate basically the space and maybe simulate them into a few qubits. Sure, but then you're introducing some truncation errors. Same goes for the third category, where we have the interaction between qubits and gauge fields, or fermions and gauge fields. So either I have to truncate gauge fields to be able to play around with the interaction, or I need to find a different method.
So different method comes from the continuous variable quantum computers, where I can use, for example, photonics can be used to describe all the photonic interactions and gauge field theories. I can embed them all there pretty nicely. But the problem is, photon doesn't interact with superconducting qubits. So how can I create a method that can interact qubits and qubit? That's what I'm going to talk about a little bit today. So qubits, as we already seen, can be achieved with the superconducting circuits called datoms, trapped ion topological qubits, and these are digitally realized, very well known, and we can represent this as the circuit description that I showed you before. And Q-modes are pretty much the same. We can realize them with photonics, trapped ion, and again, superconducting circuits. Why superconducting circuits can achieve Q-modes, I will get into that later in the talk. And these are basically represent infinite dimensional Hilbert space, which is very much suitable for representing gauge fields if you want to represent the entire structure of the gauge field without truncation, hopefully. They can be gate-based as well. We have certain operators that we can digitize and operate on these Q-modes in the photonics and in the trapped ion, any hardware that you want. So the gates that I'm going to talk about today, we can represent them as just like before. Instead of now representing them in a block sphere, we can represent them in a as a Wigner function, where we can displace these Wigner function. We can squeeze this wave packet. There's non-Gaussian gates I'm not going to talk about, but we can basically introduce non-Gaussian gates, although this is really hard to realize in a photonic quantum computer. We can, of course, rotate, and as just like in CNOT gate, we can entangle two different two different Q-modes with a beam splitter, for example. So how about hybrid system? How can we realize a qubit and Q-mode interacting with each other? Because I don't want to truncate my gauge field to put it on a quantum computer. How can I realize such a hardware? So trapped ions are really ideal interface to be able to achieve this. We've been working on this quite a while. So basically, trapped ions has ions that I can use as a qubit. Quantinuum already is developed this technology. You can flip this spin of an ion, and you have a beautiful qubit. And it has a very long coherence time and everything. It's really safe. But I can do something else. If I just use the collective mode of these ions, I can create a quantum harmonic oscillator inside the quantum computer. Now I have both Q-modes and qubits at the same time. Of course, there are some challenges. I have to tune the laser in a certain way, and I have to sacrifice a couple of qubits inside my quantum hardware to be able to control this Q-mode. But at the end of the day, I can achieve. And in the paper, I believe we calculated that if we want up to 8 modes inside our oscillation, I believe with 3 qubits, sacrificing 3 qubits is enough to get a really decent fidelity for an ion trap system. So I'm showing you here a variety of gates that we can realize in a very high fidelity. There are qubit gates, Q-mode gates. We already know these were possible because we can realize Q-modes or qubits separately. What I'm interested in, what is really important, is the hybrid gates. So I can realize qubits interacting with Q-modes at the same time as a red sideband or blue sideband. They're also introducing a non-Gaussianity through this gate. So it can bring different features into this. And we can realize these gates with a really high fidelity for a certain structure that we worked on. So let me walk you through an example that we studied, because we wanted to understand how can we use these in a real scenario. So we looked at James Cummings Hubbard model. This is very, very simple condensed matter model, which is very widely known. And it has all this structure, all the pieces, bits and pieces that I'm interested in. It has qubits interactions. It has fermionic interaction. It has some Q-mode photonic interaction. So it's basically displaying how this photon interacts with an electron. And if you look at this last term, I have both few modes interacting with
qubits. So using the gate set that I introduced earlier, I can basically create a digital quantum computer that maps this entire Hamiltonian onto my quantum computer as a trotter step, for example. This single thing shows you a single trotter step for this particular Hamiltonian. So we took this concept and put it on the quantum hardware and try to work out how to simulate this time evolution. For example, I fixed random initial state with the random parameters on the Hamiltonian, and we can simulate this oscillation between qubits and qmodes. As you can see, these Bs are bits in each site, and M is describing new mode, and this is the time evolution with respect to these fixed parameters. So time evolution we can work out. This is pretty easy. This is trotter steps, basically, trotter evolution. How about preparing a state? Can we use, for example, a VQE type of method using the same architecture instead of having this time evolution fixed parameters? How can I map these into a trainable parameter so that I can basically treat this as a VQE procedure so that I can prepare my ground state or in the future prepare my proton state, hopefully. So it's basically the same idea as how you would do in a regular superconducting quantum computer, where my gate is basically a stack of these gates. And I'm optimizing this entire circuit with respect to expectation value of my Hamiltonian and trying to do the gradient descent to find the global minima. And it turns out we are able to map between with various kappa and delta values. You can map it to a fidelity. What you would say, oh, you are not able to get any fidelity, any reliable fidelity in this middle region over here. The reason for that is my first excited state, it becomes degenerate with my ground state, so I'm not able to differentiate them anymore. That's why I don't have any fidelity here. But we also looked into, for example, looking into the fixed quantum number ground state. And in that case, there's no degeneracy, so we can differentiate them perfectly in all of the entirety of the region. So that's great. That means we have the ability to prepare a state, we have the ability to do the time evolution, and we can choose an interesting parameter, for example, two-body correlations that I'm interested in to measure in the hardware collision event, and do the entire chain of simulation. It's perfect. What's lacking? What else is missing? So the problem is there is limited coherence time in my current quantum computers, and I cannot go beyond that. If I want to simulate the time evolution, I have to trotterize this, and for a decent time evolution, I need to simulate multiple, probably thousands of trotter steps to be able to achieve anything. The problem is my coherence time in current, I believe last time I checked, it's in IBM, it's 50 to 100 microseconds. But the problem is, single qubit gates take like 71 nanoseconds, and the two qubit gates, which is huge, takes 600 nanoseconds. So there's a very much limited time frame that I need to prepare my state, timeable my state, and then measure something. It's really limited. So how can I go beyond? You might say that, okay, why don't you use machine learning to do this VQE thing, and maybe you can shrink this time to do everything more efficiently. Sure, we can try, but there's a problem there too. If you increase the size of the Hilbert space, what you end up getting is a Baron plotter, something called Baron plotter. You're losing the gradient, so you are not able to optimize your system anymore for a large lattices or very deep circuits. So you ended up this barren plateau that you cannot move anywhere. So what can I do? What is the solution to this? Yeah, how can we go beyond this limitation? So the main issue is there are commercially available gates that I have to use to be able to run anything on my quantum computer. What if I don't? What if I just create my own gates according to my own taste? Because if, for example, I want to go here on this plot sphere, I have to take this two-step operation to be able to get there. It's already to 60 nanoseconds wasted of time. How? What if I can just go from here to here directly, but there's no direct way to go there because there's no gate available? How can I use AI to train my quantum computer to directly go there without using available gates? So it turns out I can use the pulses that they use to create this gate. So in order to create this gate, if, for example, in IBM, they have a Josephson junction. They tune the electricity signals going into Josephson junction to be able to get a certain fidelity gate set that available to you. What if I directly use these pulses inside the quantum hardware and tune my gate evolution for a certain pulse duration, and directly get what I'm looking for instead of applying this multiple gates billion times? And hopefully, maybe if I tune this in a really good manner, it's basically giving me an ability to simulate everything much more coherent than a short time frame. So let me try to go through how this works. So in a superconducting quantum computer, Josephson junction is simulated by something called transmon Hamiltonian. This is basically an unharmonic quantum oscillator. So that's why I said there's a Q mode inside your superconducting quantum computer as well. Underlying hardware is actually working as an unharmonic oscillator, where you have the 0-1 shift between transition between 0-1 state. There is an unharmonicity to be able to split second and third or any higher degrees, higher order modes in your system so that you don't leak into that, because it's really hard to measure those states in a superconducting hardware, as far as I know. So you want them to be separated enough so that you end up with the lowest 0-1 state. And then, of course, you have the qubit architecture, which physical qubits are actually talking to each other inside your quantum computer. So these parameters are pretty much fixed by the producer, by IBM, for example. I listed typical values for these in IBM quantum computers. You can access them from IBM's website. So I need another term to be able to control this with these pulses and everything inside my quantum hardware. So this comes with the control Hamiltonian. Essentially, I have a pulse term here, basically giving me a certain range pulses depending on your laser. You can tune it, but typically these are between -22 to +20 megahertz. And there's the phase rate between qubits and Q modes that they're interacting here. So using this, basically, I can tune my pulse rate and the phase between these pulses for each pulses to be able to get a new gate that designed particularly by me. I don't care what gates available in my quantum computer. By tuning these parameters, how many ever I want, I can create a new gate that basically solves my problem, hopefully for me. So why this is really important? Because it essentially gonna lead a shorter coherence time. It's not shorter coherence time, but shorter time execution time, so that I don't hit coherence limits during the quantum computation. And it has been shown that this method is free from local minima if you have a certain evolution time achieved. And so that it lasts from barren plateaus, which I will show you a little bit later. So let me tell you about Schrödinger model and how do we simulate Schrödinger model using these techniques. How can we prepare the ground state, for example, of the Schrödinger model using these pulses? So Schrödinger model is basically 1+1 dimensional U1 gauge theory that is coupled with Dirac fermions. You can see the Lagrangian here, and I have an extra chiral rotation here just to make things a little bit more spicy. I can use staggered fermion discretization and Jordan-Wigner transformation to be able to map this to a Hamiltonian formalism that I can use it to embed on a quantum hardware. So the first
first equation here is very simple. It's basically a Hopping term, Ising Hopping term. It's very simple, just in the addition of this chiral rotation. Even the second term is like really similar to a mass term, for example. But the third term, since I'm implementing this Gauss law, I'm integrating out my gauge field to be able to simulate this, it becomes a bit messy. So this last term creates this non-local Hamiltonian effect. It becomes really challenging to be able to simulate in a classical computer because of this long-range interaction in my lattice. That's why we choose to work with a Schrödinger model, because it's really challenging, especially when you have this chiral rotation, chiral frequency. So if I just take this model, take this Hamiltonian, convert this to a Trotter step, a single Trotter step in 4 qubits, just in 4 qubits, four-site Hamiltonian, looks like this. It takes 11 microseconds to run on a quantum computer if I don't do any smart things. And I'm actually cheating here. As you can see, my qubits are jumping over here where I need to introduce actually some swap operations here. I'm even avoiding this. I'm even avoiding those swap operations, just raw, assuming everything can talk to each other. I have 11 microseconds. That means I can only run 9 Trotter steps in my quantum computer, which means nothing. What can I do with this? So how can we improve this, this limitation? So what we did is, let's assume that my quantum computer is same structure, just 4 qubits. I have a linear quantum computer that everything is talking to each other in that adjacent format, and I'm creating my Hamiltonian with using just pulses, right? Basically, again, just like in VQE, I'm optimizing to get the ground state expectation value of the Hamiltonian. So I'm diagonalizing the Hamiltonian with the quantum computer. If we optimize this, what we got is basically I can execute the entire circuit with 180 nanoseconds, which is 61 times faster than single Trotter step. And I cannot guarantee you that single Trotter step will be enough to prepare the ground state of my Hamiltonian. Probably I will need to repeat this multiple times to be able to get the ground state. But with quantum optimal control, I can achieve much, much faster, 61 times faster than single Trotter step. And this is basically showing you my pulse profile inside my quantum computer. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, for each qubit, I have 100 different pulses and single phase for the entire qubit. I can even overkill this. I can add more phases, I can add more pulses, etc. So how about my evolution structure look like? Because I told you that this can leak into higher energy states inside my simulation, then I lose the information, then I have to find a way to retrieve this information if I leak into, for example, second excited state or third state. If I look at my pulse evolution, I don't see anything leaking. I think I didn't add it in here, but there's a little bit of leakage to second site in some of the states in the middle, but at the end, it all dies out. And I can compare to my state to an exact diagonalization. Of course, I can get exactly matching results with the exact diagonalization and prepared state in terms of eigenstate of my Hamiltonian. Okay, so this was for only a quantum computer that is just adjacently perfectly sit together next to each other. The problem is my Hamiltonian is not like that. My Hamiltonian is all-to-all correlated. Or in a different Hamiltonian, maybe my Hamiltonian has a periodic boundary condition. How can I integrate? Is there anything that I can improve in the architecture that will reflect my Hamiltonian structure? Would it actually affect the result? Can I make it faster by manipulating actually the hardware itself? What we did is basically, this is experimentally not possible, but what we tried to do is, what if my quantum circuit, quantum hardware is all-to-all connected? Does it improve anything? And it turns out that I can go 109 times faster than single Trotter step. Again, just single Trotter step.
So it's truly faster that if you implement the physical information that we have from the Hamiltonian, we realize that it's much more efficient to simulate the quantum computer. So imagine that embedding entire periodic boundary conditions, you can have a quantum hardware with the periodic boundary condition already embedded in there, like their circular circuit structures. We can use that information with this structure to be able to achieve much more efficient computation of this. Okay, so I have this infrastructure. How about in a real hardware? Can I put this in a real hardware and get anything comparable to what I just showed you before? It turns out the answer is no. If you go to a publicly available, not research-specific quantum hardware, you will see that anything around 1 microsecond even goes up to 2 microseconds, and this is the mean value with the uncertainty of the red one. So I cannot achieve anything. So what is the reason for that? It turns out there is a reason why this particular quantum hardware is public, because the coupling strength between each qubit are only 2 megahertz, and the state-of-the-art quantum hardware in, I think, Eagle processor, they are calling it, it's around 20 megahertz each coupling between qubits. So it makes a huge difference to have a higher value of coupling between each physical qubit. So we thought, okay, if that is the main concern, what if I can increase this coupling strength to, I don't know, 30, 40, 50, maybe I will get infinite efficiency. Well, there's no free lunch, unfortunately. We try to increase the coupling strength and see what is the effect of this coupling strength on the simulation efficiency. So this is showing you the net minimum estimated time that you need to have on the pulse. And as you can see, when I decrease the coupling strength, it increases quite drastically, exponentially, actually. And also my uncertainty on the ground state also increases. If I increase this coupling strength, I start to hit a plateau at around 20 megahertz, which is currently what we have in the quantum hardware. So there's no free lunch, there's a limitation, which is called actually quantum speed limit, if I'm not coding wrong, I hope. So there's a certain limitation that you can evolve an adiabatic state from state A to state B. There's a certain speed that you can achieve, and you cannot go beyond that. And we actually basically see that effect by playing the coupling strength as well. So if this works, that's great. That means we basically cheated our life from the Corinus time. We solved the Corinus problem. What about the Baron plateaus? Because I still need to optimize the circuit. How does it going to work? How does it, if I cannot use VQE, I cannot use quantum optimal control. So is it a problem still? So what we looked into is we basically sampled from a really uniform distribution of the parameters of the pulses and phases that I have, and we calculate the variance for each sample. And what we get is basically, as you can see, the variance increases with the number of qubits and the pulse duration. So when I increase the pulse duration, I give much more contribution to each pulses, so they are the probability of having this Baron plateau. So I have more time for this single pulse to evolve inside the function. So I can increase my variance with the number of sites. That means that if I increase the number of qubits, I'm going away from Baron plateau. And I can, if I deepen to Baron plateau, I can basically increase the pulse duration to get out of it as well. So there's much more control on the Baron plateau issue over here as well. So that's all I wanted to talk about. Let me conclude. Let me summarize what I've talked and tell you a little bit about what I'm planning to go beyond this. So I talked about different methods, different quantum hardware, how can you use different quantum hardware to basically simulate fundamental physics, because we have different pieces in the standard model that we possibly want to simulate, but they might not be suitable to simulate just by qubits. Maybe we want to extend this to use QMODs, and by using ion trap quantum computers, this might be possible. Or there are cavity interacting with superconducting qubits that gives you the ability to have this Q-mode qubit interaction as well. I'm not expert on this any shape or form, it's just by what I read. So there are different technologies that we can use to be able to get this standard model simulated on a quantum computer much more efficiently, hopefully without much truncation. Of course, there has to be truncation because of the experimental limitations, but hopefully it's in a much more nicer way. And I talked about quantum optimal controls because of the hardware limitation, coherence time limitation in the hardware. We can use the quantum optimal control to basically engineer a specific computational structure for ourselves, for our specific use. Also, that is QCD simulation or whatever our Hamiltonian needs. So we can tune the hardware specifically for our needs. So where I want to go from there, basically my goal is hopefully one day to simulate PDFs and fragmentation functions more accurately. So I want to understand how can I use these hybrid systems to do some scattering, how can I use them to simulate PDF or quantum link model, for example, if I implement quantum gauge fields as a quantum links instead of just integrating over them. I can represent gauge fields as Q-modes and link them with the qubits, for example, fermions, on this hybrid system, so it's much more efficient. Yeah, truncation. I want to understand how this hybrid system will basically eventually evolve into QCD. And I'm looking into different methods beyond tensor networks or quantum computers, for example, neural quantum states, to be able to understand how can we actually achieve bridge between today's limited classical methodologies to tomorrow's hopefully more able quantum computers. Thank you very much for listening. I thought I would try to take questions.
Very interesting talk. Questions from the room?
Yes, please. So I might have missed something, but when you're talking about the speed up when you design these like custom gates, it seems surprising that it's like orders of magnitude improvement, not because of individual gates presumably formed a short composition of a few discrete gates.
I need too many gates to be able to achieve the same result. So we looked into how can we, so the problem is how can we prepare the ground state of Schrödinger, right?
So it's not that you still decomposing the gates and you just make kind of composite gates. It's that you're doing the entire evolution.
Yes.
Instead of, okay.
So I need too many gates to be able to achieve what I'm trying to achieve. So that it takes a long time to be able to do. So if I can shrink that even a little bit, I have a little bit more time to do time evolution. I have a little bit more time to do all measurements of different observables, for example. So I'm just trying to shrink that time as much as possible. Now I have a PhD student actually working on how to do this, not just for ground state preparation or excited state preparation. How can we do this, use the same methodology called optimal control to compress the time evolution, for example? How can we shrink that time evolution so that we can do the trapterization much more efficient. Is it for
yeah.
Just so towards the end, when you came to sort of talking about taking your custom gates and making them real, how exactly do you go about this? Is there some sort of like low-level API available which gives you more direct control over the pulses?
There was. Well, so now, according to US government, it's a national security interest. So that's why it's actually really important for us to develop our own quantum computers here. So there was something called Qiskit Dynamics interface so that you can use the pulses and design your own pulses into inside quantum computer and actually submit this job into quantum hardware. They canceled this after we published. We were so lucky. But yeah, I think it is really important that we have access to our own quantum hardware so that we can explore these capabilities.
What changes do you have to do with the hardware to achieve this compression of gates?
I don't need to change anything. So there's if I don't want to change the architecture itself, sure, that's fine because it's harder to change the architecture when it's already there. As long as I have access to pulses that they use to create these gates, they already use them to create the gates. If I have the access to use them directly, I don't need to change them. I just do their job for them for my purposes. So instead of having a keyboard, I have electronic signals to write my time.
Have you ever tried or are you planning to eventually benchmark these gates relation the things on the real quantum computers?
Yes. For which one are you asking for? For hybrid one or quantum control?
Like the real.
Both of them? So yeah. So for hybrid system, for qubit QMOD, we are actually working with Sandia National Lab. So they have experimentalists who are expert on designing these trapped ion quantum systems, and they are currently working on how to make our simulations real apply to their quantum systems. Basically, they are using quantum optimal control to be able to achieve the gains that we propose to achieve. So yeah, we are trying.
They already have a quantum circuits normally, right?
They have, yes. They do have access to hardware and everything. We just want our gates in their machine.
And can you apply it here in the UK? You know, the NQCC here has program that's going to allow implementing or doing any simulation benchmarking on real quantum computers based here. Basically, either based here in the UK or elsewhere as well.
Well, I did that for regular superconducting projects that I'm working on, but I believe I believe NQCC for ion trap, for example, working with Quantinuum. And I think Quantinuum only allows for qubits instead of having access to qubits, as far as I know.
I think the superconducting is Rigetti. What's on Rigetti?
Only Rigetti. For ion traps, but for Quantinuum.
Yeah, for the ion
trap, but there's like an internal hardware teams as well, which was, I guess, basically there's like two modes of working with the NQCC. One is that there's this kind of platform where you access commercial offerings where you probably don't get this low level access, but there's also the internal research teams where you probably have much smaller devices but potentially a more meaningful collaboration on.
No, but there is also IBM, you mentioned IBM, you have there is the access also to Willow, the famous chip that's where it basically probably the most.
But I think maybe one. You don't have this low level access.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we tried, well, when we were doing the paper, when we were writing, we were working with IBM and we submitted there. But after we published, basically they cut the access for the low level.
Interesting. Yeah.
I don't know if it's possible to do NQCC.
Definitely
access.
Possible. And the call for basically you could submit application up to it's probably soon the deadline for research, for academic research. Before it was only open for industry and now currently open to academic researchers here in the UK. Basically.
Yeah, I had
and,
a...
can definitely send you the link or show you the link.
I did apply. for a PDF project that we are working, but I didn't know that you have access to low-level pulses through MQCC. That would be really interesting.
I think there is a possibility.
Okay.
And then, another question. Did you also explore other modalities, like for quantum computers and hardwares? For example, the other modalities having much more coherent time, but much slower speed, gate speed, and these kind of things. For example, cold neutral atoms can give very long coherent time with the trade-off basically with the much slower gate speed. It's improving, but like if there is any kind of...
I am very interested in looking into it, but I've never worked on particularly natural atoms. But because we don't know which hardware gonna be perfect.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm really interested in looking into different hardware.
Because the good thing also is with these modalities, you have multiple atoms. You can create ion chains and complex systems where you can basically have harmonic oscillators and so on. So it's very interesting as well. There.
I will look into it.
Yeah.
Any questions from Zoom?
I have a question. I was just wondering if you could expand a little bit on simulating scattering systems using a quantum computer.
Oh, that's something that I'm trying to learn at the moment. Let me try to describe as much as I know. I'm learning, so not expert at any means. So what you need to do is, for example, you have the Hamiltonian, but you need to prepare the weight packet first to be able to put it on a quantum computer. And I think for the fermionic models, you need to do some sort of Lvov transformation to be able to do this, embed this wave packet on a fermionic lattice, for example. It's much more easier if you have a scalar field theory, because then you can describe your wave packet much easily, but with fermions, it's a bit more trickier. But then you can basically evolve this in time once you embed your wave packet. Sorry. Once you embed your wave packet, you can evolve this in time and observe how they collide and everything. But this is basically the extent of my knowledge.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other question from Zoom or Room? Not that I can ask. In terms of scaling, I mean, particularly, how do you see the hybrid approach scaling for a realistic gauge theory, particularly non-abelian QCD?
That's a great question. That's a very hard one. So I think currently I don't remember the numbers. We have the numbers in the paper, but the problem is you can put only so many ions inside a ion trap, depending on your technology. So you need to sacrifice some of the ions to control the modes, and then you have the modes and everything. So there are different limitations on that being able to achieve. So I think it needs to be evolved a lot. I don't have the exact numbers, but I think currently, as far as I know, it's much more limited compared to a larger size of supercomputer. Because right now we have, thousands of qubits. I don't think we can have that many qubits and qubits on one trap. I mean, we can have in qubits, I believe, in a ion trap, but not qubits and qubits at the same time, that many qubits and qubits at the same time.
And then following up, particularly the algorithm work which you did, how transfer resolution is from ion trap versus the hardware platforms?
Gate structures are very much transferable, depending on the technology. For example, if you want to use superconducting quantum computer, you cannot use the same gate set, of course. Then you need to truncate your gauge field or integrate over your gauge field. So that's two different solutions that you can do. if you have, for example, this cavity interacting with the superconducting qubits, that gives you another environment. I don't know much about it, but that gives you another environment to do QMODs and qubits at the same time, for example. So they have a similar gate set to how that you can map directly. You need to change some of the operations, but at the end of the day, you can get similar things. So there's one more thing that I've heard about photonic quantum computers, but this is just what I heard. Apparently, you can use the polarity of photon to make it look like a qubit, and then photon is a QMOD already. I don't know how they interact, but maybe that's a possibility too, but photon doesn't interact with it. I don't know. I don't know how to do that. It's just how it.
I'm particularly happy to see our colleagues from NQCC here, and that sort of gives us a platform for engaging more with the physics and the world of quantum computers. And this seminar is an example. So let's thank our speakers again. And thank you very much. Please feel free to join us for lunch. And we'll have some follow-up seminars as well in the PPD and PPC seminar series in the coming weeks. So we'll keep you updated on this. Thank you very much.